Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA, your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball and the NBA at FanRag Sports and College Hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, writer of Bulls basketball and the NBA at FanRag Sports and host of the 312 show on AM 1590 WCGO in Chicago. Follow us on social media on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure you're following the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. Text and voicemail line 331-979-1369 is the line to text and call. If you want to drop us a voicemail, a text message, whatever it is, a reaction to anything that was going on over the weekend, whether it's Summer League, whether it's Zach LaVine's contract situation, David Nwaba's restricted free agency, maybe the Bulls' interest in Rodney Hood as well. Anything that you want to talk about, leave us your reaction at 331-979-1369. Well, Matt, how you doing? Welcome back. And Bulls Nation, as you know, we do this every single Wednesday. We're doing a special mailbag here. We asked for all of your reaction to the Zach LaVine signing over the weekend, whether it was text messages or voicemails. And so this is going to be a unique episode. So the majority of what we're going to talk about here is kind of just allowing Bulls fans to hear other Bulls fans talk about LaVine and us reacting to that as well. So it's going to be a very heavy Zach LaVine involved episode, but I think you're going to get a lot out of it, and there's definitely some mixed reviews from Bulls fans, and I'm excited for you all to hear this. But how you doing, Matt? What's going on?
What's up, Jordan? Bulls Nation? Wait, I'm confused. I thought our entire mailbag segment this week was going to be about Jay Cutler's appearances on Very Cavallari, because that's all I want to talk about.
If you tweet
right
or say anything about Cutler on a reality show, you need to log off. Delete your account. You played yourself.
What? Oh, come on, Jordan. Don't tell me that you are not all about this new Jay Cutty life of being the eye-rolling husband in the background of his wife's reality TV show. Because it is. Have you watched this, the series premiere yet that aired on Sunday?
Absolutely 100% not.
Dude, it's so good. The rest of the show is garbage. It's, you know, women catfighting about, oh, you're not nice to me and you're not doing your job right. But Cuddy's screen time is absolute gold. I hope that the Lauren is talking about this over on Locked On Bears, which you should check out, by the way, if you're a Bulls and Bears fan here in Chicago. But come on, Jordan. I can't believe, dude, you got to check out Cuddy's stuff. It's great. He is
the only thing that
I
saw.
He missed his calling.
The only thing that I saw was the 20-second clip of him outside, and I don't know if it was his wife's friend.
First time I worked out in 2 years.
Hey, why'd you take a 2-year break?
Well, I was a hairdresser, so I feel like I got my workout in with a blow dryer and stuff, you know?
You can't be serious.
No,
I'm done.
Yeah, okay. It was hilarious.
I'm done.
My favorite part was when her coworkers and friends were on their way in, and Cuddy was just sitting in the kitchen looking all dismissive. She was like, can you at least try to be nice to them? And he said, I can be neutral. And then this parade of his wife's friends march into the kitchen, and he just blanks them. Like, doesn't look at them, doesn't say anything. And then they walk off into a different room, and Kristen's like, Jay, really? Like, couldn't even manage a hello? He's like, nah, I like to give them more buys than highs. And I was like, yes, Jay. Yes. Good for you.
So you're fanboying all over this new reality series, but you won't watch Ball in the Family on Facebook?
Yeah, exactly. I love me some Jay Cutty, man. Especially if it's not throwing interceptions on Sundays in a Bears loss. If I could just get that knowing smirk and that beautiful just disdain for anything and caring about anything attitude that he has in a reality TV show format, I am all for it. All right, I guess we can get to our Bulls mailbag now, because you're not a believer in Jay Cutty's new reality TV show career.
Let's get to the mailbag.
Give it a chance.
So we'll start with some text messages, and we're going to intermix all the voicemails that you left as well. Like I said before, 331-979-1369 is the line to text and call us. You can always hit us up on social media as well at Locked On Bulls.
All right, this one comes to us from the 720. In regard to Jimmy and Kyrie, who's to say this wasn't Garpax's plan all along? Give Jimmy the contract, trade Jimmy for assets. Too good to get a high pick with Jimmy on the roster. True. Jimmy leaves Wolves in 19, comes back to Chicago a la LeBron with a better roster. Hello, championship. I live in Colorado and I've been drinking. So yeah, this is far fetched, but what do you guys think? Appreciate the text. Also appreciate the honesty. Nothing wrong with having a nice, refreshing beverage in your hand while you're talking about sports hypotheticals. This one, however, what do you think, Jordan? Was this
Stop
all just
it.
A grandmaster like, plan from John Paxson and Gar Foreman?
The play out of it, too, and I don't know. If Butler comes back and plays with Kyrie and they settle everything here in Chicago and it ends up being something like that, I would laugh, and that's probably what the narrative is going to be from C Red fans, saying, like, this was the plan all along. We got three assets. We completely hosed Tom Thibodeau and the Timberwolves and all the disconnect that's going on up there. Like, that would probably be the laughing point, too. But no, like, our discussion about Butler, I think, started and ended where Kyrie was in the cap space and the relationship that they had here. And look, I don't think that Butler hates everybody here in Chicago or anything like that. I just don't think that the relationship, as far as the front office thinks and sees it going, really ever work. So to me, maybe it is, but to me, I'm leaning towards the realistic point, and that's the relationship is too fractured, and what the Bulls still think of Jimmy Butler, and I would assume 2 years older now going into free agency next year, the Bulls probably still have that same mentality, is he's not a player you can build a championship around.
No, I'm with you there. It's a fun hypothetical, because we know that Jimmy would like to play with Kyrie at some point in his NBA career, and Kyrie, when healthy, is one of the most dominant guards in the league. And a guy who was bent to the mountaintop and won a championship and knows what it takes to win. But the idea that this is all part of the plan, that we're going to get Jimmy back and we're going to get Kyrie to come with them, is lunacy. No. Keep drinking the good stuff out there in Colorado, Bulls fan. But yeah, I think you're a little off base on that one.
We could assemble the all ACL team. As far as LaVine.
Oh, God. I swear to God.
Resign Derrick Rose at the minimum.
If the next two words out of your mouth are another certain someone from Chicago, I'm going to flip my shit, Jordan.
Jabari Parker.
Get out of here. Get out of here.
And then Kyrie Irving. Like, the Bulls could have four guys on their roster that have had knee injuries in the past. And so my point about this is, I told you before when we were talking about this that I really like Kyrie Irving, despite the knee injuries and the possibility that maybe that's going to linger throughout his career now. Like, look, Kyrie Irving's, what, 26 years old still? So I could understand the concerns about his knee there and having to have ending a surgery this offseason. Well, I wouldn't even really call it the offseason. It was the back half of the season. But still, point is if you didn't like the LaVine signing as far as the knee injury goes, and that's your concern there and that he'll never develop, then you got to keep that same energy when you're talking about Butler and you're talking about Kyrie Irving. So to me, I know that those two players are way more proven and are stars already in this league, and LaVine is not. But you got to keep the same energy when you're talking about injury history and the possibility of that reoccurring and paying all that money to two guys. So, yeah, people forget, too, like the minutes on Jimmy Butler's legs are bad. And also, Jimmy Butler dealt with a couple injuries. You know, when he was here in Chicago, he missed a lot of time. So don't forget about that as well.
Yeah, Fair point.
Next text message comes from the 408. It says, I say let LaVine walk. Give us more cap to work with next year. Allows them to give more minutes to Hutchison and Blakeney. Why overpay for what most likely will be another season of not making the playoffs? Matt, I'll let you touch on this one.
First of all, I don't know why this person threw Blakeney in there. You want to let LaVine walk so that we can give more minutes to Blakeney? I don't care what reservations you have about LaVine and his weaknesses in the NBA as a defender, as a shooter with tunnel vision, or whatever other things that people are knocking him for right now, some of which are legit. But to suggest that you want to let him walk to free up space for Blakeney, to me, just suggests that you don't really know how to differentiate between different levels of skill with NBA players. I'm sorry, like, Blakeney, we were just talking about this in our previous episode. Like, to me, the potential is not really there with him for the Bulls to sign him to any kind of legitimate multi-year contract other than the two-way he's on right now. If you're concerning Blakeney's minutes and an opportunity to let Blakeney shine as your reason for letting LaVine walk, then I think you're misinformed a little bit.
I think the overpay for most likely not being another season of not making the playoffs, like, we kind of understood that, didn't we? Like, as Bulls fans, we knew that the Bulls probably weren't going to make the playoffs this year, and now, I mean, I've heard other people say that they might be competing for the 7-10 seed in the East, and we'll see where that falls. But I'm not in that camp. I still don't think the Bulls have a shot at the playoffs. I said maybe an optimistic look at this season is 35-38 wins. And I asked you last week if that's good enough to get you in the if 40 wins is good enough to get you in the playoffs in the East. And you still said that's probably borderline 8 seed just missing. So we'll see there. And, like, look, you don't have to fix every hole that this Bulls team has in one off season. I think that's the bigger picture here. And you let LaVine walk. I said you've got to toss up the idea of whether or not you trust the front office to hit on superstar free agents in 2019 or 2020. You see that, and that's not a complete reason why you should overpay LaVine. And I still don't think it was probably a little bit of a stretch as far as how much money he got, but you're also paying for potential too. So I get the knocks on him and the production in the first 3 years. I get that. But my question to you is, do you have really that much trust in the Bulls having all of this money to spend in 2019 and 2020 to rely on superstars coming here? Because I don't have the same faith in that. And I think more faith in LaVine turning out and being able to develop into a pretty decent player and playing up to the contract than I do that the Bulls can hit in 2019 or 2020.
Yeah, I think I'm with you there. And it's hard to know with great confidence that if they were to have more money because they let LaVine walk, if they would actually succeed, as you're saying, in putting that to use elsewhere by landing two guys. Two big-name free agent stars in 2019 or 2020, whatever it may be, they're still going to have plenty of money to offer close to two max contracts, assuming, you know, Lopez goes away, Ashik gets stretched in his final year where there's only $3 mil guaranteed, and, you know, Holiday's off the books, all sorts of people come off the books, and the Bulls are still going to have plenty of cap space, even with LaVine having this contract. And like you said, it's kind of just they're hedging their bet a little bit by making sure that they keep LaVine here because he is a young player with potential to grow into a borderline all-star player, we think, they think. And what if their greatest fear comes true, which is that once again they strike out free agency? It is absolutely possible. We're talking about, hopefully, this young Bulls core maybe being a 7 or 8 seed, maybe not, but at least looking interesting enough in the 2018-19 season, particularly Markkanen and hopefully also Chris Dunn, for somebody big to say, you know, that young Bulls team over there, that actually looks pretty good, and I want to go play with them and not necessarily need another big-name marquee star to go with them to Chicago. Because if that's what you're worried about with LaVine's contract taking up space to offer two maxes, the Bulls can still finagle a way to offer two maxes or two very close to maxes. But what's the likelihood that they get two guys to come?
On top of that, too, Matt, real quick, over the last 3, 4, 5 years in free agency, what has been the biggest thing with these free agents as far as teaming up and becoming super teams? That's been like the biggest theme of all of this, and players going behind the scenes and texting each other and calling and meeting up and saying, well, I want to play with you. Where can we find a fit to play? You come to my team, et cetera, et cetera. I think that is also a factor in it, too, is like, you know, it's all fine and good to have the cap space available to sign these guys, but who do you have to market to come to Chicago and say, yeah, two guys want to team up and come here, or one guy wants to come by himself to Chicago? I think that's also a huge factor, too. And right now, the Bulls don't have that marquee superstar guy that has connections around the league and says, you know what, I can draw another guy to come here and play. You know, I can draw two guys to come here and play, and we can really do something here. Like, there's other teams around the league that are already advanced and ahead of what the Bulls are doing, and those teams are probably going to be in line, at least what the history is telling us, of players kind of doing this behind the scenes and talking to each other in general. So to me, like, you have to hedge your bet a little bit, because you just can't go into free agency and say, hey guys, we've got $40 million to spend. Who wants to come to Chicago in like a half rebuild? To me,
yeah.
To me, free agents are going to look around and say, nah, I'm good on that. Like, I'll go to the East, but I'll go to the 76ers, or I'll go to the Celtics, or I'll find a way to go to another team that already has superstars that are established, and I can win better than there. So that's what I have. I have on it.
And that's fair, and that's why I think you and I are both, you know, we understand why the Bulls match LaVine, and we understand that part of the plan is still landing free agents next summer and the summer after, but we are both very skeptical as for their ability to do that and to actually get those guys. Finally, maybe keeping LaVine helps in that regard.
We got to take a short break here on Locked On Bulls. When we come back, we're addressing all the voicemails that we had left for us. 331-979-1369. If you want to be a part of the conversation, you want to text in, you want to leave us a voicemail, you'll be able to hear that on the show. Every Wednesday, we're doing mailbag. So we'll continue that when we come back. Stay right here with us at Locked On Bulls. Be back in 60 seconds.
Hey guys, what's up? My biggest issue isn't necessarily with the offer sheet, but it's basically the issue with the fans. I don't understand. When Gar and Fox fail to trade up for a player, it's because they don't want to take the risk or they don't want to gamble on it. When they do trade up for a player, aka Doug McDermott, it's a stupid trade. And on the flip side also, when they want to sign a player to an extended high offer sheet, they're overpaying. But then when they don't sign a player, it's considered being cheap or conservative. It's like Bulls fans kind of want to have it both ways, and it just doesn't make sense to me. I feel as if fans are just as cheap and conservative as the front office.
All right, back here on Locked On Bulls, thanks to the 404 for the voicemail. Man, I'm with you, man. Like, you can't have it both ways. And that's what I said yesterday and earlier on last week, is like, you can't point to the Bulls and call them cheap for selling a pick and then spending money on LaVine. You can't knock them for not trading up and then they do and they miss on Doug McDermott. It didn't play out, but at least they took the risk. Like, I get what you're saying, is like, everything negative that happens, you don't really pick a side on either scenario. You just point everything negative to the front office, and it frustrates fans. Like, this caller, I feel like, feels that Bulls fans are always negative, and they're just as cheap and just as conservative as the front office and the way that they picture the front office and ownership being. So I can feel you from both sides, man. Like, the Doug McDermott trade didn't work out, and we've grilled them for it, and they deserve that. But they took the risk to move up, and I'm not saying that, like, that was needed then, but those types of moves, they get hammered for. They get hammered for letting guys walk for nothing, a.k.a. Pau Gasol. They get hammered when they spend money. They get hammered when they don't spend money. So I understand it, and I think Bulls fans are conservative. Some Bulls fans want to be conservative. They wanted to be conservative in the draft. All of these things talking about the way the front office operates. And look, the Bulls front office is to blame for a lot of the bad moves that they have made, but they've also made good moves too. And I think sometimes those things get overshadowed by the negativity and sort of the narrative that's been in place for this front office over the last 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, I think it's really, to me, it always, the most fascinating thing is it just shows you how differently this insanely passionate fan base thinks about the team and the people running it. Because there are believers, there are non-believers, and there are people who are see Red Nation and, you know, we got this. This rebuild is going to be great. And there are those who say, I still can't believe we traded Jimmy, and I can't believe that this front office is still employed. Like, it is a huge fan base. We've talked about this a bit on this show. And it is such a huge fan base that is so passionate that everybody has different takes ranging everywhere on the spectrum of Bulls are going to be title contenders in 2020 to, oh my God, I'm so close to just giving up on this bunch entirely, and everything in between. But those who are starting to get cynical are the ones that I would preach to and say, you know, look at yourself and ask yourself, are you really upset and judgmental about every little thing that's going on? And are you positive that everything that this front office has done is terrible? Because if you truly believe that, then you're blinding yourself with the hate that has just sort of taken over your soul as a sports fan. And we grill the front office when they do hypocritical things, like say, get younger and more athletic and then go out and sign Dwayne Wade and Rajon Rondo. That is absolutely hypocritical and illogical. So Bulls fans can't be hypocritical and illogical, and as you said, have it both ways when they're getting angry at the front office to say, you never take risks, this, you know, you're cheap, you never pay anybody, you never shell out the big bucks. Dang it, why did you shell out the big bucks? You know, it's just... And I'm not saying all Bulls fans are like this. You know, I'm sure that there are people all over that spectrum that I just mentioned that listen to this show, and we appreciate all of you. And I sympathize with those of you who are closer to the doubter end of that spectrum when it comes to this rebuild. I sympathize with you. I have my doubts too. But it's the ones that I'm still not giving up on, but it's really hard to not just tune them out at this point, who just say, well, I nothing is ever going to be good again until they get rid of this front office. Look, I would like to see some fresh faces in those positions too. But it's not like it needs to control every conversation about every element of this team, because it's just not the case. Look at the players. Talk about the players.
I was just going to say, it's not fair to the players too. Like, the guys that we are high on, and like, we talk about Lauri Markkanen in such a positive way, talk about Chris Dunn in the same light too. So to be angry at the front office, it's cool, but you can compartmentalize some of your thoughts. And, you know, just because you feel like there are positives and negatives to this team doesn't mean you have to pick sides on either one of them and staunchly take all of your takes and either be positive about all of them or negative about all of them. I was describing this on Sacramento Radio this weekend. So they had asked me about what Bulls fans feel like overall, and my consensus was there's two sides, there's two extremes to Bulls fans. There's what you said in hashtag C-Red, where there's fans that think this team's going to compete in 2020, potentially in NBA Finals, a top three seed in the East. Markkanen's going to be a five-time MVP. Chris Dunn's going to turn out to be an all-star. Zach LaVine's going to live up to his contract. All this stuff. So that's one far end of the spectrum. And then we've got hashtag FireGarPax, which, you know, Marquise Teague and Doug McDermott and selling the pick and letting Powell go for nothing and trading Nico Mirotic away and all of these things that they like to criticize the front office for, I think, sit in the negative part. So I feel like this show, as far as we go, we sit somewhere in the middle.
I was going to say, man, just steady stream right down the middle. Like, let's not get too high or too low. Let's be reasonable.
Exactly. All right, let's get to another text message here. From the 224, this is short and sweet. There's only one team stupider than the Kings, and it's the Bulls. That's tough.
I mean, I might just make a quick edit and just flip that around and say there's only one team stupider than the Bulls, and it's the Kings. I think that's more appropriate. Because seriously, what the hell were they doing offering LaVine that contract? Like, it doesn't make any sense.
And if you go look at the Kings fans, they were like, what are we doing? LaVine can't play the three. Buddy Hield doesn't play the three. Bogdanovich doesn't play the three. And, so what are we doing here?
And they also passed on Luka Doncic in favor of Marvin Bagley. I mean, I still can't believe they did that. I can't believe the Hawks said, yeah, no, we really want Trae Young. We were willing to take Trae Young instead of Luka. That's mind-boggling as well. But the Kings, you can have Luka Doncic. And you're like, nah, we'll take Bagley. What is that team doing? I have no idea.
And look, the Bulls haven't let any stars walk away, like turn into stars after they left the Bulls. Jimmy Butler's already a star when he was here. I'm thinking about guys back to when they had Hassan Whiteside, they had DeMarcus Cousins, they had Isaiah Thomas. They let Hassan Whiteside and Isaiah Thomas leave. Like, those two guys turned into stars. Like, yeah, granted, the star power there was probably only a couple years. But still, let two guys walk away. How about the amount of times back-to-back-to-back-to-back drafts that they love just drafting centers? Like, I was making fun of them because they took Bagley, and I'm like, okay, they're going to start, like, five guys from their front courts in their new lineup. Like, they're talking about going after Jabari Parker and like throwing all this money. Like, it's clear nobody wants to go to Sacramento. And to me, whatever they're doing with that team, and they gave up on DeMarcus Cousins and traded him away, and some of their picks have been questionable over the times. And look, the Bulls have had definitely more success than the Kings, and I don't think that the Kings front office is smarter than the Bulls, but I'm with you. I think I would flip that around and say the only team stupider than the Bulls. And hey, you could throw the Orlando Magic in there too as well.
Yeah, like, that have been completely irrelevant since Dwight left, and that was like 2009-10.
So you look at those teams and some of the mistakes that they made. Look at all the players that the Magic took and missed out on too. So I look.
Look at Dallas.
True.
They're exciting future in Dallas now with Doncic leading the way. But after they won the title with Dirk in 11, instead of planning for the future, they've just been coasting as Dirk gets older and have been completely irrelevant to a point where, like, people in Dallas are getting impatient. Like, dude, Cuban, what the hell are you doing? It's not like the Bulls are the only team that have had a rough go of it recently, while the Warriors and LeBron have been collectively dominating the league. It's not like the Bulls are alone here.
Completely agree. Another text message here from the 843, Matt, says, Mike from South Carolina, this offer sheet was tough for me. If the Bulls had proven they could land legitimate stars in free agency, I would have passed, but they can't. You can't bank on future free agency, even more so for the Bulls. Let's hope he feels great with another year coming off the ACL and turns into the all-star player they need.
That's a solid text, solid thought. I mean, I think that's kind of where I am. I think it's where you are. We didn't love the fact that the Bulls had to match. We didn't love the fact that the Kings came in and gave him an offer that we both think, at least right now, is an overpay. Not a gross overpay, but an overpay for what LaVine is coming into this season. But if you are a glass half full kind of person when it comes to your Bulls fandom, you're hoping that in the later stages of this 4-year contract, assuming that he does stay around and isn't traded away, LaVine actually looks like a player who's worth that contract. And the point about the free agency, that's not, you know, you and I were just talking about that. It's a valid point. What if they can't sign anybody? Would you rather have Zach LaVine or nobody?
I'm with you. And believe me, I think if LaVine would have signed with the Kings and the Bulls would have let him walk, I'm almost for certain they would have probably overpaid Rodney Hood. And the interest that they had in Jabari Parker probably would have turned into maybe a deal. And neither of those players I like better than LaVine. I'll just be straight up with you. I don't like Hood better than LaVine. I don't like Jabari Parker better than LaVine. And to spend money on both of those guys to bring them back, like, the Bulls knew what they were doing when they traded Butler a year ago. They knew that they were going to have to do this, and this was going to be part of the negotiation. And you know what? All it takes is one team to do this, and that's exactly what happened. They told LaVine to go out and get an offer sheet. He did that. And the Bulls had to make their decision, and they did. And so we'll find out. Like, $19.5 million, I think people just get so stressed out about as far as the cap space go. And, oh, you got to have money to spend money. And with free agencies and everything goes into it. And, like, I push back and I look back at 2010. Again, the Bulls were in place to have a legitimate opportunity to bring two stars in on max deals. And they had Derrick Rose. And they still couldn't draw somebody to come here. So I look at that, and yeah, you can have the cap space to spend the money, but who's going to recruit those guys here?
Yeah. No, that's fair. All right, let's take another voicemail. This one comes to us from our buddy DVS. And guess what? It's not about Zach LaVine. Yay!
What's going on, citizens? This is DVS again calling in. I had to pull off the road in the middle of your conversation that you were having about how to handle the playoff seedings. And the issue that I had with the things you guys were putting together is that you weren't really paying attention to what I feel is like the most important part of these conferences that we have up, which are the divisions. So my solution for this is, yes, I do believe that we should move to a 1-16 seed for all of the playoffs and that the top 16 teams should get in. However, you need to keep that competitiveness going in for those conferences. So my solution would be that we go through a 1-16 seed, but the top 6 seeds go to the conference winners in order of player rank. So that means that if Golden State comes in, then they'll get their division will go to the top, and they would have the number 1 seed. If you are a 1-6 seed, you maintain home court advantage unless you play somebody who is a top seed. That means that a smaller market is going to be fighting to try and get into the top of their division because they know if they get to the top of their division, they're going to maintain home court until they get towards the semis and the finals. I think that'll keep the competitiveness, that'll get all the best teams up in there, and everybody will be going for their throat because they know that they can't just cruise through the regular season. They need to win their division in order to have the best chances in the playoffs. I'm a genius. I came up with this off the top of my head. I'm going to start driving again now. You guys take it easy. Peace.
All right, so Jordan, DVS has some perspective and an interesting idea as far as the conference realignment and or playoff reseeding thing that we were talking about in a recent show. So if I understand him correctly, he's basically saying, yeah, let's do 1-16, but let's make division winners be an important factor when it comes to home court, as opposed to just win-loss record. What are your thoughts?
I like that, and I'll be completely honest. I forget at times that the NBA actually has, like, divisions, and like the Central Division and the West and the East Division and some of these. It's not a bad idea. I mean, honestly, if you're trying to compete, can keep the competitive balance as far as conference East and West goes, it's a small factor. Like if you're one of these top teams in the league, you're a top six team in the league, or even if you're a team in a division that's maybe just a little bit above average, you don't have like a superstar team, one of the top 5 teams in the league, it's still saying that like you can have the ability to get home court advantage for the entire playoffs, and you have the ability to get a top seed even if you are in a smaller market. So I kind of like this idea. I don't know how well that would go over with some teams that maybe are in the same division. Like I would think about out west, like Golden State and the Lakers probably being in the same division with LeBron. And you look at like Houston being in the same division as OKC. Those kinds of teams, I think, might have a little bit of a problem with this. And I don't know if the 76ers and Celtics would be in the same division, probably. So I'd look at that too as well. So that wouldn't benefit some of these teams that are top tier. But I like the idea. I think it's not full-fledged, but I think the idea of keeping both balances of 1-16 and also keeping the competitive balance of the conference makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, it is an interesting idea, and I think I like it, but I can't help but think about the NFL comparatively in a situation where, say, all right, you don't have one of the best win-loss records in the league, but you did win your division, and maybe your division was weak, but you won your division, so that means you get home court, is what DVS is talking about here. And I keep thinking about the AFC South in the NFL, which, you know, is starting to turn around. The Jags are all of a sudden good. Hopefully, if Andrew Luck comes back healthy, the Colts might be not awful again. But for that stretch of several seasons where the AFC South was just dog shit, and like you could win that division with an 8-8 record, or even I think one time, maybe twice, a 7-9 record. And because of the way the NFL playoff breaks out, the wild card teams definitely had better records and then had to go play a road game, as opposed to the division winner who went 7-9 or 8-8 gets a home field playoff game just because they won their division. To me, that part is the part that I don't necessarily agree with. Because obviously that's a crazy example of not likely, but maybe actually, like if talking about Eastern Conference divisions, what if you win your division as a team that's 41-41 or like 40-42? Not out of the realm of possibility. So that's the part I don't like about it. It's like, do you really get the reward of a home court advantage in a playoff situation just because you won your really bad division? That's the part I don't like.
Yeah, that's where I get held up too. So interesting. I mean, it would keep the parity around the league at least. Like, you're giving higher seeds to maybe teams that aren't as deserving. And that's where I think the complaint would come in, though, from the top teams. It's like, we busted our ass in our division all season long and we won 60 plus games, and now we're what, the 7 or 8 seed because we're not a division winner? Like, that's where you get into the conversation of like, yeah, this probably won't work, but interesting idea nonetheless. Let's get to another voicemail, a frequent caller here in Mike. Mike's got an interesting perspective on LaVine and a pretty decent question I want you to answer, Matt.
What's up, fellas? It's Mike again. After having a few days to process this Zach LaVine stuff, I just had some comments. I think what it boils down to is the likelihood that this is going to turn into a good or a bad contract for the Bulls. To me, based on what Zach LaVine has shown, Zach LaVine is an explosive, exciting, offensive weapon, but it seems to be that, you know, that happens in a way that does not happen in the flow of the offense. He doesn't play any defense, and his basketball IQ is not where it needs to be. All those things working against him, I mean, I don't have any questions about his ability to be able to take the ball on ISO and go score, right? But to me, the Bulls are in a rebuild, and the point is to invest their money wisely, and the point is to lock in good contracts and be ridding themselves of bad contracts so they can throw lots of money at people who are going to be difference makers. And to me, if you're going to throw a lot of money at somebody to be a difference maker, I want it to be a two-way player. So my issue with this is that I think it's at the high end of what Zach LaVine could potentially be worth if he maxes out all the tools that we've seen from him. So, to me, in order for this to be a good contract for the Bulls, LaVine's got to play some defense. He can't be a total defensive liability. He's got to be able to work in the flow of that offense, and they need to be, in other words, their offensive productivity needs to be better with him on the floor than it is with him off the floor. And I'm afraid that even for as potent and as scary of a scorer as he is, I don't know that he's going to get to that point. But like you said, he's 23, he's got some learning to do, but he's not a 23-year-old like Chandler Hutchinson where he played 4 years in college and he's just learning the NBA game, you know, and at 23 will have 1 year under his belt. I mean, he's going to have 4 years under his belt or whatever it is pretty soon here, and he still shows no signs of, you know, a basketball IQ on offense and any clue on defense. So to me, I guess the reason that I'm a little irked with this whole thing is that I think it's unlikely that LaVine ever outperforms this contract, and it's a lot more likely that LaVine underperforms this contract, making it a problematic, muddy situation for the Bulls. Now, let's say the cap goes up, which everybody's going, you know what, this $20 million is not going to look that bad when the cap goes up. Well, guess what? Our neighbors, the Chicago Blackhawks, signed Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane to identical $11 million deals, and hoping the cap went up, and it didn't go up as much as they thought, and those deals are now a little bit trickier to work around than they probably were hoping.
Thanks for checking in again, Mike. Yeah, it's a tough one. It's a doozy, this whole idea of whether LaVine's contract will turn out to be a good deal or an overpay. That's kind of where the fence is right now for Bulls fans. And he uses an interesting comparison talking about the Blackhawks obviously committing big money to their two stars and Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane, and their hope that the NHL salary cap would increase to sort of alleviate some of the pressure of such a huge percentage of their money going to just two players. I don't think the Bulls are in that dire of a situation, because when you look at how small the NHL salary cap is compared to the NBA and how much of a percentage those two contracts alone eat up of that potential cap space, the Blackhawks comparison is interesting, but I think not entirely accurate. You can say, well, we're worried about the NBA cap not going up because we expected it to just go up and up and up every year. And as the Bulls rightly predicted in 2016, it flattened out. But just an interesting note there, in case you didn't see, and this is something Zach Lowe of ESPN picked up when he was going through the salary cap memo. The projection for 2019-2020, up to $109 million. $116 million in 2020-2021. Set at 101.9 for the upcoming 18-19 season. So we are going to get a $7 million jump from next season to the following, and then another $7 million jump. The Bulls, even with this LaVine contract, are still in fine shape and are going to get additional cap space because of those expected jumps. So to me, the Blackhawks comparison is an interesting one to make, but a little off-center.
Yeah, and in the cap situation too, like the Blackhawks said that the cap was going to go up and it never did. The Bulls sort of projected this flattening of the cap in some sort of way, you know, like talking about how it jumped up nearly $30 million in 2 years, and now you're talking about like an increase of about $7 million per year. So that's different. That's nearly half each year. So the Bulls have seen that. And like I talked about before when we were talking about LaVine, the percentage-wise, like it's only, what, 17.8% of the Bulls cap next season. So for a guy that's going to be a starter in your lineup for 23 years old, that's not too bad of a deal. But yeah, interesting comparison as far as Kane and Taze go. I don't know if it exactly lines up with the way, but to answer Mike's question whether or not this contract, what's the likelihood of this contract being good and what's the likelihood of it fizzling out? I think it's all going to come down to what the motivation of Zach LaVine is. And I think everything built up, and he knows what this fan base thinks of him. It's very split. He thinks there's a lot of fans out there that think he's going to be a bust and he's going to come back and play terrible defense and be an inconsistent scorer. There's other fans that believe in him still and still think he's got that all-star potential. I think the Bulls shifting their focus from LaVine to Markkanen over 1 year span and saying, you know what, instead of LaVine being our cornerstone, it's actually going to be Markkanen as our cornerstone. I would assume that that's going to make Zach LaVine work harder and want to become the face of the organization, want to become the number one guy. So me, if it's motivation factor, and we'll see, I think this first year is going to tell us a lot. The motivation factor is to give more efforts and to be more consistent, develop your game. Coming off the ACL and having a full season to try and evaluate here, I would probably put it as right now, it's probably 50-50. And I know that's kind of a cop-out answer, but 50-50 weighing each side of it and what we knew about LaVine's game but prior to the injury and post-injury, I think you can add it to the other 50% where you say he fizzles out. I think it's all going to come down to effort, though.
And I think that's why, like, it's pretty clear the fan base is so split on whether they are currently optimistic or pessimistic about this deal for LaVine turning out to be a good one. It just goes to show you right now, we just, and this, you know, partly goes back to what we were saying about, don't overanalyze and overvalue the 25 game sample size we got last season when he was on a minutes limit and coming off an ACL and just trying to get used to playing with new teammates and all this stuff. The fan base is split on this contract being a good one and a bad one because none of us know what happens next.
Yeah, and all we have to base off of is 25 games with the Bulls, and yeah, sure, 3 years with the Timberwolves too, and everybody wants to point there and say he didn't. That production level does not make sense for the money that he's making, and I say, you know, sure, maybe 10 or 12 million makes sense for the production level that he had, but you also got to add potential in there too. And like I said, all it takes is one team to sign him an offer sheet, and that's what they did. And they knew what they were doing a year ago when they traded for him and knew that this was going to happen. So I'm still not ready to give up on LaVine, and I think it's going to take at least a full season to really understand what his potential is. And I think, like I said, it comes down to effort, and that's something that you can't quantify in a box score or in advanced analytics or any of that. So we'll find out. We'll find out what Zach LaVine is made of and if he's really willing to live up to this contract. Another text message, Matt, here comes from the 813. Says, I'm not too upset about paying LaVine. Zach is still only 23 and is a hard worker who should improve. I do think paying Zach LaVine was maybe a way of buying some goodwill going forward with players and upcoming big free agents. Bulls always had the reputation of being cheap and not wanting to pay their guys. Hopefully this buys them some goodwill. It could have been worse. The Wiggins contract at a max deal. Thank God we didn't do that. The next couple of years are about developing anyways and waiting for the fall of the Golden State Warriors. Anyways, love to hear from you guys and hear what your thoughts on this.
Yeah, I mean, when you compare it to the Wiggins contract, you say, yeah, no, the Bulls didn't do anything nearly that stupid. That Wiggins contract looks like one of the worst in the NBA right now because he just hasn't panned out. And 19 mil, 19 and a half mil, whatever. I mean, it's so for this upcoming season, 15.5% of the total cap being used. And that's, and I think you mentioned this recently, that's probably a better, more accurate way to look at it, because a lot of fans are mistakenly looking at that big 20 million number and thinking that the Bulls signed LaVine to a max deal. And then that's just not true. Max is closer to 30 mil at this point in today's NBA salary cap. And he didn't get that. 20 sounds like a lot, but it's certainly not the max. It's not, it's like 2/3 of the max. And it's only 15% of the team's total salary cap. And when you look at comparatively other players who are not star players but good players and what kind of percentages their payroll takes up against the cap, 15% is a pretty decent number for the player that the Bulls plan on Zach LaVine being.
Couple more text messages before we get out of here, Matt. This one comes to the 309. Says, maybe a hot take, but not meant to be. Chandler Hutchison is a poor man's Kawhi. May never be as good, obviously, but like Kawhi, his calling card should be defense and corner threes early on while working on the rest of his game in practice. He has the tools to be a very nice starter in the league. What do you think about this?
That's a lofty comparison. Maybe you can see some similarities about where they are starting off as NBA players who have certain strengths and weaknesses that are similar. That I can see. But I think that even before he really blossomed offensively, Kawhi had better handles than Chandler Hutchison has right now. Kawhi needed to develop a shot and a consistent, reliable mid-range shot as he also built up his abilities as a three-point shooter. Hutchison, I think, is more so weak in the ball handling area right now and came into his own as a scorer and a shooter as an upperclassman in college, but still has plenty of work to do there. And let's not think for one second that Hutchison is going to be as strong of a defender coming into the league as Kawhi was, because that's just not happening. That's wishful thinking. I have confidence that Hutchison can turn himself into a good, if not very good, defensive player in the NBA. But comparing him to Kawhi on that end right now is just...
And look, Kawhi only played two seasons in San Diego State. I just want to make the comparison here as far as defense goes. Kawhi Leonard was a way better defender than Chandler Hutchison was, especially immediately. When he was a freshman with San Diego State, his defensive rating was a 90.6. In his second season after he got drafted, 86.3. In college, like, that's huge. I look at Chandler Hutchison's his defensive rating. While it did vary over the four seasons he was there, he started as a freshman as a 95.4. That's not horrible. That's pretty decent. But comparing it to Kawhi Leonard, that's almost 10 points worse than Kawhi was. So I don't think Chandler Hutchison has the defensive ability that Kawhi did when he came into the league, and I don't think he's ever going to reach that type of peak. I think the one thing that is curious to me is whether or not his three-point shot can be consistent. You look at what Kawhi did as far as three-pointers go in college, he was only a 22% three-point shooter. Like, if you combine his two seasons, 23%. So you look at that, and Chandler Hutchison, you know, over his four-year career was a 35% three-point shooter. So that's what I would look to him to be. And if he can develop his defensive game, that's even a plus. But I'm looking for Chandler Hutchison to be the wing that's going to push the ball down the floor, be another guy that can handle the ball running the point, even in a second unit, which is where he's going to start this season. Being a guy that can facilitate, can pass, and can knock down the threes. If you can do all that and play average defense for me, I think it's a solid pick at number 22. But I think, like you said, the Kawhi Leonard comparison is me thinking about, like, Dwight Howard taking a full court shot at the end of a game. Like, that take is pretty far off for me right now. But, Mountain West Conference guys, I get the comparison there. That's a light comparison. But, let's tape our expectations for Chandler Hutchison so far. Yeah.
P.S. Like, man, still nothing on Kawhi. Didn't I tell you on this show like a couple weeks ago I wouldn't be surprised if he stayed in San Antonio.
Yeah, but I also told you, too, I wouldn't be surprised if he stayed in San Antonio just for 1 year. You know, like to finish out this contract, not sign and be an unrestricted free agent in 2019.
Crazy to think that the Spurs would even contemplate letting him walk for nothing. Like, there's no way. If they don't trade him this summer, they have to trade him before the deadline, right? Because, like, he's gone. Unless we're not hearing the whole story about how possible it is for the relationships to be, you know, mended. Hey, and maybe Tony Parker leaving changes that. Parker took that contract. He's gone. He's with the Charlotte Hornets now.
Yeah, I just, to me, I still can't believe that the Spurs would even entertain the idea of bringing him back next season. After everything that went on, like, think about the players in that locker room, too. Like, what are they going to think of Kawhi? Like, think about the report, too, that just came out a few days ago about how his camp hid Kawhi Leonard in the same building when the Spurs people tried to come in and check on him and see how he was doing. Their camp hit him. Like, he ran. So, to me, like, the situation is so weird, and it's gotten so bad at this point as far as who's talking in his ear and the fractured relationship. And it doesn't even seem like it's Kawhi and Greg Popovich. Their relationship still seems to be strong. But it's more so just everything else going around him. And, like, just it's so bizarre. It's very, like, this is the most bizarre story I think we've seen as far as players and disconnection and superstars. And, like, think about it, too. This guy won an NBA championship with this team not even 5 years ago. So that's just what blows my mind about it. But I'd be shocked if he started the season on San Antonio's team. Like, as far as San Antonio goes, I can't see how you can do that.
Lakers not going to overpay for him. Philly not going to overpay for him. Boston not going to overpay for him. Who needs Chandler Hutchison? Moral of the story, Bulls are getting Kawhi. Boom. End of mailbag.
Chandler Hutchison, Bobby Portis, Denzel Valentine, and your 2019 pick. Does that do it?
Sure. Sure.
Real quick, I know I made a reference to players that had ACLs before and what kind of production level they had. I just want to shout out to 217. They came up with a list of other players that might be more comparable to Zach LaVine, and he said, I understand your point that ACLs are not a death sentence, but better examples would have probably been Rajon Rondo, Lou Williams, Ricky Rubio. I realize Westbrook is a lot bigger name, and he is much more similar to LaVine, but guys like Kyle Lowry, Jamal Crawford, Baron Davis, Bonzi Wells, Corey Brewer, these guys tore their ACLs and came back strong. So I just want to throw that out there, too. And, like, I'm going to try to come up with a list of all the players and what their production value was. And if you want to see that, that's going to be over on Twitter at Locked On Bulls. But other good comparisons to players that have been productive in their roles that have come off ACL injuries before in the past.
Absolutely. And hopefully LaVine is next one in line of those who make an impressive turnaround. And we saw athletically, at least, even in small glimpses last season, that's very possible.
Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Remember, we do mailbag segment every single Wednesday. So if you want to hit us up with your text messages, your voicemails, any reaction or questions you've got for us, want to hear it discussed on the show, 331-979-1369. It's a line to text and call. You can always hit us up on social media at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls_Peck on Twitter. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. We've got written content over at LockedOnBulls.com, so head over to the website. Check out all of our written content there, as well as if you don't have a podcast provider or you like listening in the internet browser, you can go to our website, LockedOnBulls.com. We have a beautiful player that's right there and has every single episode. We post all of our episodes daily to Locked On Bulls, too. So if you're somebody that likes to listen to it in the browser, maybe, and you can't use it for whatever reason, you don't like apps, you can head over there and listen to the episodes there as well. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. For Matt Peck, for Jordan Malley, we are out, Bulls Nation. Have a wonderful day. We'll be back on Thursday. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
LaVine, he goes right. Oh! Stop it, Sampson! Did you not get the memo? He didn't come for the massage. He came for the facial. Oh, my goodness.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.